Jeremy, how are things going for you this evening?
Going well. I'm actually at Omni Studio right now, getting ready to do a demo session, and had enough time to call and chat with you guys.
Well, I'd greatly appreciate that.
Well, you know this is going to take 2 hours, don't you?
Man, I don't have 2 hours. They told me 15 minutes. I didn't sign up for that.
So Martha didn't tell you it was a four-hour show?
No.
So anyway, tell us about your time with Dale Ann Bradley.
Oh, my time with Dale Ann was great. Dale Ann's a phenomenal singer, songwriter. Really taught me a lot about music and, was a growing experience for me personally, musically. She's just such a passionate, heartfelt player and was very good to me, and I had an awesome time with her on the road, and we played some great dates and had a lot of fun. But, she's really, her musical tastes are, they're so wide. I mean, she loves bluegrass, and she's rooted in bluegrass, but, I mean, she's great at old country, at, acoustic, Americana. I mean, she can do it all. A lot of people don't even know she can play the heck out of an electric guitar. I mean, she loves rock and roll. She's just a great musician.
Yes, she is.
From what I've heard of Dale Ann Bradley, it doesn't sound like her band is too bad either.
No, her band's great. She's a great band.
And that, of course, that's including you too, Jeremy. Yeah. But now, hey, there's something.
I help her out whenever I can. Actually, it worked out. We took a trip to France this year to play a festival there at Crapone.
Oh,
and it actually worked out because I was there with the Grassfuls, and then Dale Ann was playing the day after, so I got to stay an extra day in France and help her out, and it was fun to play with her again. And that was Kim Fox on guitar and Steve Gawley and Alan Bybee, which I'm sure everybody's familiar with those names.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was a great show.
Yeah. Well, now, may I ask now, Jeremy, how old are you?
I am 29.
Oh, man, you're just a young guy then.
I'm just a pup.
Yeah, how long you been playing fiddle?
Actually, I've been playing since I was about 10 years old. My grandfather got me into it. He always had a lot of old records and tapes and stuff laying around the house. Was always a huge bluegrass fan. And one day, my grandmother actually bought a small fiddle at a garage sale and brought it home. And I just started playing it. And would sit in front of the tape player or record player and just rewind until the tapes and records would wear out, until I could figure out the notes on the fiddle. And then I think I was coming along enough to where they wanted to get me some lessons. So I actually did 5 years of classical study Roger Zahab.
Okay.
He is the assistant conductor of the Pittsburgh Symphony. And so I studied with him, which I didn't know at the time would help me immensely moving to Nashville, just being able to sight read and read music and compose. And he taught me a lot about keys and playing in different positions and recognizing things. So, my time in classical music, thankfully, was short enough to make me a better player, but not long enough to screw up my bluegrass fiddle playing.
I was going to say the same thing. It didn't mess you up playing bluegrass then. Well, now, it sounds to me like you didn't have time for anything else when you were in school then.
No, when I was in school, I had two hobbies, and that was playing and racing RC model cars.
No kidding. I fly RC airplanes, so.
Cool. Yeah, I never got into planes, but I loved dirt track racing. I had a Team Losi car. And it was a lot of fun. It's something my grandpa and I used to do. Same thing. We used to go to lessons on the weekends. We had a routine. We would always go and eat lunch and go to a lesson. And he'd come back and pick me up. And that was kind of our thing on the weekends. So.
Cool. My first RC car was a Parma English electric.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
How long you been with the Grassfuls?
Oh, I think it's been about 3 years now.
3 years. So did you perform with Dale Bradley's album Catch Tomorrow?
I did not. No, I was actually not on a recording with her at all.
Oh, not on a recording. Ah, okay.
No.
Well, I'd ask you.
I came along after that record was done, and then I left the band right before she started her new project, and so did
which was
most
don't...
of the band at that time. So she actually just got a bunch of session players.
You were in between Catch Tomorrow and Don't Turn Your Back.
Yes.
Yeah, it was the Catch Tomorrow. It's got a Humble Pine tune on it called Can't Stand the Rain.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great song.
Oh, it's
a great song.
Yeah. Well, now, where are you from now, Jeremy? Are you were you raised in that area where you're at now?
No, I grew up in Uniontown, Ohio, which is a really small community. It's right by Hartville, Ohio, which people might associate with the famous Hartville Kitchen. It's an Amish restaurant out there. But, just a really small community, kind of in between Akron and Canton, so a little northern Ohio.
Yeah, know where it's at. Been through there.
Yeah, moved down here probably about, I guess it's been 4 years now. Wow, I can't believe it's been that long. I came down here originally to play with Dale Ann. She moved down here, and so I kind of moved with her at the time. And we were playing some dates, and actually what happened is Aaron McDerris, who was a banjo player at the time in the grad school, called, and Jimmy Mattingly, the fiddle player, was going out with Dolly and playing some different dates and wasn't able to make all the graphical dates. So he called me to fill in, and I filled. I actually couldn't make the first one that they called me for because I had a date with Dale Ann. But they called me a couple other times to come and fill in and, like my playing. And so that's kind of the long story short.
But tell me what it was like standing up playing the national anthem in front of the Titans and Steelers game.
That was amazing. You know, you can't. I love sports. Period, and I love football. I mean, I'm a huge Ohio State fan, Titans fan.
Boo!
Sorry.
We're here at Purdue.
I know you hate that, but I got to throw that in there.
No, you realize we're broadcasting from a Big Ten university.
But. So yeah, you know, it's funny. You watch football on TV, and I've even watched it in the stands. And after the anthem was done, which was amazing, and the crowd response. But to actually see the kickoff and be at the game, standing on the sidelines. I mean, you cannot until someone stands on the sidelines of a football field on a professional game and hear the sounds and what's going on. I mean, you just cannot have enough appreciation and respect for those guys. I mean, it's just unbelievable what they do.
They
hit very hard.
Oh, yeah. I can kind of imagine that, having stood on the track at the Indianapolis 500 and changed tires on race cars.
Oh, wow. Cool.
For media day. So that was kind of a fun experience. But, one of the things that I was so impressed with was I'm 6'3", and them guys are short.
Yeah, yeah.
It's... The noise that you hear on television when those helmets hit is nothing compared to what it sounds like when you're standing on the field.
Oh, I'll bet that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that's an amazing experience to see those guys play and how fast they and just be right there for it all was just a lifetime experience.
So now, are you married, Jeremy?
I am not. I am single.
Are you looking?
Oh, I'm never looking.
Oh,
I hope that one day the right person will come along and find me. I think looking is a bad idea.
Oh, no kidding!
That's a good philosophy. That's a good philosophy.
Right now, I'm enjoying life. I'm very fortunate to have come to Nashville at such a young age,
yes.
And to get in with such a great group of guys and be in the grad schools. I'm just very fortunate and blessed and happy to, be living here. And, there's so many deserving, talented, wonderful musicians and people that are in this town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
So many people are struggling and songwriters. And I'm just happy that I can play music and do what I love for a living and wake up every morning and, do what I love to do.
Life is good when you're with one of the best bluegrass bands in the world.
Can't get any better than that.
Life is good. Yes. Yeah. Get to do some amazing opportunities. I mean, I've been been out of the country, got to perform for President Bush.
That's a thrill.
Tell us about that.
Oh, that was great. We actually, he has, you know, an advanced team. The president always has an advanced team every time he goes anywhere, which basically, you know, goes in and sets everything before the president gets there. So this was a party for his advancement team, which was held at the Library of Congress, and it was just a great event, and it was honoring the president, the vice president, basically, you know, him thanking the team and the staff and all the advanced operations people. And so we got to perform there for them and just met some amazing people, got to have, you know, our picture taken with the president, first lady, and, you know, got an autographed picture and a nice letter on the White House stationery. So, you know, things like that, you can't take back. I mean, I'll have that memory for life.
I'd call that the equivalent of a Super Bowl ring.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, to have a picture with a president in my house framed, you know, it's
right.
I'll have that for the rest of my life.
That's
regardless
right.
of what happens in my career. I'll always have that. So I'm very fortunate to be able to do all these great things.
Tell me about Steven Seagal.
Oh, Steven Seagal. Well,
my wife would kill me if I didn't ask you about Steven Seagal because
he's a phenomenal guy. He's a great guy, very funny. Actually played we played his birthday party twice now. He actually was going down the road, believe it or not, and was listening to satellite radio and heard Grapple's song on the radio. And his assistant was with him and said, I've got to have that band for my birthday party. I want to have them. So the assistant contacted Jamie, and we set it up and went and met him, and he was just, he's a great guy. You know, he's great friends with the band and actually a phenomenal musician. A lot of people don't know that, but he's a great guitar player, good singer. He's really passionate, not only about martial arts, but, you know, about acting and also music. So he's a great guy.
Well, now my wife has really got to meet him.
Yeah.
You know, I do MC work sometimes with Sam Jackson down at Bean Blossom, and I've introduced you guys a couple of times, and she's always after me. She says, go backstage and ask them guys if we can't get Steven to buy the park. Because, you know, Dwight's had it up for sale for a while, so...
Yeah, that, you know, that would be a great thing.
I'm telling you, it'd be awesome. My wife thinks so anyway.
But yeah, we always have a lot of fun with Steven, and he's been really good to us, and you know, we look forward to working with him in the future for sure.
Oh, well, awesome.
Well, now Jeremy, what have you got coming up next? Now, have you got a big project coming up now?
Yeah, actually this Monday we just came out with the brand new album, which is on Cracker Barrel. It's the Grascals and Friends, Country Classics with a Bluegrass Spin. And it's actually only at Cracker Barrel. And it's a great record. We have a lot of guest artists on it, a lot of really cool material and songs. And, I mean, you know, who can be going to Cracker Barrel and having an awesome meal and pick up a Grascal record while you're there?
That's right.
We want to thank them for all they do to support bluegrass. Yeah. You bet.
But now, you know, Jeremy, if you ever get up this direction, we have a Cracker Barrel right here on the outskirts of Lafayette. So we would like to have you guys stop in at the Cracker Barrel and maybe come down to the radio station and, you know, perform a little bit.
Hey, we'd love to do it. You know, if we're in the area and we can make it happen, absolutely.
That would be absolutely fantastic for us.
As long as it's on Sunday, because I love that fried chicken.
Well, if you can't get it there, I'm sure we could find some place where we could get you a good meal.
Yeah, you betcha.
Awesome. Hey, and, you know, I want to mention too, you know, we have a song on the record called I Am Strong, which was written by Jamie Johnson.
Absolutely. We were going to talk to Jamie about that, but...
Okay, yep, and his wife and Janae Fleener, and, you know, it's anytime you buy this album at Cracker Barrel, proceeds of the album go to St. Jude's Hospital, and it's a great cause, so I hope everyone goes and gets a record and supports that.
Yeah, we can't say too much about that because we are on public-supported radio, I can't plug too many people about things, and I can't mention prices and things like that. But we appreciate that, and we appreciate what he's done with this new song. It's just awesome. And having watched the video, it just break your heart.
Yeah, it's a great video.
I love the way you guys come walking down the hall. And I want to encourage our listeners, if you haven't checked that out, check out our Facebook page, the Bluegrass Connection Facebook page, and we'll post a link to that music video.
Yeah, I would love everyone to see it. If you haven't seen it yet, please check it out. It's a very inspiring, beautiful video.
And like Jeremy says, a portion of the proceeds of this album go right to, what is it?
St. Jude,
that's what it was. It's St. Jude Hospital for Children, and so we definitely want to encourage people, if you enjoy that, definitely go out and get it.
Yes.
I mentioned, if you ever get up this way, Jeremy, you coming, if you ever come north on I-65, we need you to stop in out here at Cracker Barrel and maybe get you introduced here to WBAA listeners.
Well, hey, I tell you what, if we can get all the listeners in the Cracker Barrel and somebody can get me a free plate of fried chicken, I'll swallow the fiddle by the fire and we'll have us a good time.
I can promise you that would happen.
Well, hey, Jeremy, also, what other instruments do you play?
Well, I play the mandolin, guitar, viola, a little bit of everything. The only thing I never really got into is banjo. I just didn't have the patience for it.
I understand that.
What do you now?
It's got to be the most frustrating instrument in the entire world to learn. But actually, I really would love to learn. I love clawhammer, and I love a lot of old time music and a lot of John Hartford stuff. And so, I would love someday to sit down and learn some clawhammer. That's actually a goal of mine at some point. But
I'll tell you what,
I haven't done that yet. But hopefully, I'll add that to the mix at some point.
I had a great time at Tommy Webb's house the last day that Linda and I were there on a Sunday. It was hot outside, and his gal Wendy made us a good breakfast, and he sat there and taught us clawhammer banjo. Now, I got to tell you that Ike, my friend here who's sitting here with me, is makes banjos and teaches banjo.
Oh, wow. Very cool.
Yeah. Now, I got to.
How long have you been doing that?
Well, tell you what, Jeremy, I'm 74 years old, and I've been doing that for about 20 years now. I've been giving lessons, and I've made 39 mandolins, and I've made 14 banjos so far. And,
oh, wow.
And I was going to say, now, the next time if you get up this way, I have a mandolin that you might be interested in.
All right. Well, I was just going to say, if I'm in Cracker Barrel long enough, you might be able to carve me out a fiddle while I'm there.
Well, you know, that's something I've never been interested in making is a fiddle or a guitar, neither one of them.
Well, I got news for you. I don't think I would have the patience to make anything.
Well, and that's what it takes. You can make anything, but it takes patience.
You're right. And yep. I think, you know, that's awesome that you're passionate about that because I think anybody that has the patience to build an instrument is just phenomenal. And you know what amazes me? There's actually a lot of people that build instruments that are amazing,
yeah.
And they don't even play.
No. Yeah. And some of these instruments are amazing quality. I mean,
yeah, actually there's a guy in Pennsylvania that builds violins. His name is Joe Knight, and he's not he's not very well known, but, you know, he lives out in the country, and he builds violins, and he's deaf. And when I lived in Ohio, I used to go and play his fiddles for him, and I would write down what I thought about every fiddle that I played so he could get feedback on how he was building or what I thought the tone sounded like or what I thought maybe could change mm-hmm. about something. So it just always amazes me. Somebody who builds just blows my mind.
Yeah.
Now, have you spent much time with Michael Cleveland?
Oh, yeah. Mike's a great player.
Isn't he great?
Oh, he's phenomenal. Absolutely. And a great
Mike,
guy, too.
Yeah, Mike grew up playing around here at some of the bluegrass events, and Ike helped shape his future.
Wow, very cool.
Yeah,
Mike was
I remember Mike at festivals and stuff. He was always great, and he's and still is, and he practices, and he's so devoted to it. He's a great guy and great musician.
Well, can I tell you something about Michael?
Absolutely.
Okay, when Michael was 8 or 9 years old, when he started playing the violin, his mother took him to the violin teacher. Well, after 2 months, the violin teacher told her not to bring him back because he would never learn to play the fiddle. Now,
wow, you're kidding me.
No, I am not kidding
because of
you.
The way he holds the bow.
Yeah.
You know, and I was just getting ready to say, that does amaze me because, you know, taking classical lessons and learning how to hold the bow correctly.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I just, or in quotes, correctly, I mean, obviously there's no right way because he's a phenomenal player.
Yes, he is.
And holds the bow in an unorthodox way, I guess you could
to say the least.
You know, if that teacher could see him today.
I've always asked myself, what would that teacher think now, you know, if that teacher was still around?
I think what people don't realize is, you know, music in general is such a, it's, you have to have such a passion for it to play it. And I've always said, you know, if you've not experienced, you know, hurt or grief or anything in your life, it's hard to play a sad song. And you know, I think classical teachers in general, although they're great and phenomenal at what they do, you know, they're so strict on you have to do it this way and you have to do it this way.
Yeah.
And, you know, that fit the mold for everybody, and obviously didn't for him either. And, you know, the way he plays, I mean, I couldn't try to hold a bow and play like that. Probably couldn't even get a note out. I mean, he can absolutely play 90 miles an hour.
And
the way he does, it blows my mind every time I watch it. And I actually have a great amount of respect for how he's adapted it to his personal style.
Yep.
Awesome. Well, Jeremy, just a couple of last questions here. You told me that you had a classical music start, and I did too. I had 7 years of classical piano lessons, learned classical music long before I learned anything else. And so I got to ask you, are you a Joshua Bell fan? Do you ever listen to classical anymore?
I love Joshua Bell.
Me too. Yeah. Romance of the Violin, my favorite CD, bar none.
Actually, have you ever read the story about that? There's a story that kind of has been going around in an email about that. I don't know if you've seen about the subway story.
No, I haven't.
Well, this is actually a great story. It's if you have the time.
Sure.
It's basically they went to a subway in New York City, and there was a violinist that was playing a very intricate concerto. And they were there for 15 minutes, and people were getting on and off the subway and passing by, and about, you know, 5-6 minutes goes by, and then somebody walked by and tossed a dollar in the case. And then a mother with her child came by, and then the kid wanted to stop and watch for a while. Another kid came by and wanted to stop and watch for a while. But a million people walked by and never stopped to glance, and the violinist was Joshua Bell.
I've seen the video.
Yeah.
The night before, he had played at Carnegie Hall. So it just goes to show you that people don't stop and snuff the roses.
Well, they don't. And, you know, that's one of the problems with modern bluegrass today. Oftentimes when I tell people we do a bluegrass show, and I occasionally will have somebody come up to me and they'll say, well, I don't like bluegrass. And I look at them square in the eye, and I've looked at people who were 6'7", square in the eye, and said, that's because you don't know what bluegrass is. Because if you heard modern bluegrass, you wouldn't make that statement. And I think
we really found that out. At least I did personally. You know, even when we were on the Hank Williams Jr. tour opening up for him, you know, it's like all these people had no idea what bluegrass is, or they had this
preconceived notion
of what bluegrass was. You know, everybody thinks of dueling banjos or you know, whatever is going through their head about bluegrass. And so many people came up at those shows and said, my God, you know, we were never a bluegrass fan. We didn't even know what it was. And now, you know, where do we buy your album? Where can we see you again? Where can we... You know, so I think really it's just getting it out there and letting people feel what real acoustic music is that's played and sang from the heart, you know.
Well, Ike and I obviously feel very passionate about that, and that's one of the reasons why we do this show, and we've done this show for so long. My wife and I started this show, about 7 or 8 years ago now, Ike, and because of our appreciation of modern bluegrass and what it has become. It's really... metamorphosized into a spectacular art form that's every bit as artistic as any classical piece ever designed.
Well, you've got five or six people playing this one song, you know, and there's five of those people that are backing up that one person that is doing the lead part, you know, and it's quite a thing to put all that together.
Sure, and it, you know, that comes together honestly with
feeling.
Yeah, it's feeling and dynamics, and especially, you know, people on stage getting a feel for one another.
That's right.
If you take a look at you know, the core band and the Telluride band, when you had your Sam Bushes and your Jerry Douglas and your Stuart Duncan and your you know, all those guys that have played together for years, I mean, that music's great because each of them individually are phenomenal musicians, but also they know what the other one is going to do.
That's right.
Well, or Blue Highway for that. Blue Highway is a good example of that. These guys have been together,
absolutely,
what, 17 years? And I was just blown away when I saw them in Indianapolis. We saw them at a little church, and I sat front row center and watched them, and they were as tight as any band I ever heard in my life.
Yeah. And yeah, they're a great band and great guys. But, yeah, I think, you know, the more people get exposed, really, I think, to bluegrass, because it's not mainstream. You know, it's not on...
It needs to be
constantly. Yeah. It's not as popular as country, and I don't think it's to say that it can't be, because I think, you know, I've seen, you know, acoustic Americana music, I think, has really blown up and grown, and I think bluegrass is yet to see its big day. I think it's coming.
I agree wholeheartedly, and you know, my second thought on that matter is going back to Joshua Bell and classical music. Is that there are so many good pieces of music in the world today, both in modern bluegrass, classic rock, classical music, in a number of genres. I can't imagine why people would listen to rap and some of the modern music out here today and think that it's great. But I have to think that it has to do with the fact that our young people are not being exposed to what is really in the world.
Right.
What are your thoughts on that?
You know, I think until you know, it's really hard to, you know, if you turn on the radio today and you listen to, you know, the modern stuff that's played on the radio and your dance mixes and your raps and your beats, you know, I think it takes talent to do that, and that's great. But, you know, I think until you've sat somewhere like the Station Inn in Nashville, Tennessee, and been in a small, intimate room and you can hear a pin drop, and you've heard, you know, a songwriter singing a song or telling a story, until you can connect in that way, I don't think you can really understand or appreciate music. I mean, because I used to play, and, you know, I would play, and I learned notes, and I was playing, but, you know, it was until a good friend of mine said, you know, until you open your heart and just let it go, and really sit down and listen to the content and the words, not just the song, not just the music, but follow the story and feel the hurt or the pain or the happiness in the song, that will make you a better player. And I think not only does that make someone a better player, but a better listener. And I think until people get exposed more to that and not so much of the drums and the dance mix, you know, that I think they will appreciate it. How can you not, especially coming from a well-written song?
Well, now, I tell you what, Jeremy, now, I don't know if you were in on the early part of the Graskell songs, but Where Corn Don't Grow and Me and John and Paul, I think, are two of the most fantastic songs ever written.
They are. They're great songs, and I actually was not there for that, but they are two of my favorites.
Oh.
I mean, they're great.
Well, I was born on a farm. I grew up on a farm. That's all I've done all my life until the last 10 years. And so being on a farm, you know, you go back to me and John and Paul. I remember going to a little small grade school and the friendship that you make and so on and so forth. And then Where Corn Don't Grow.
Yeah.
Man, I've been through all of that.
The weeds are tall where corn don't grow. There's a lot of wisdom in that statement.
That's right. That's right.
Absolutely. And I think, and I guess it's, you know, what I'm trying to say is I think that words of songs in modern music that's played on the radio today, you know, it's like I can't even make out what they're saying half the time.
Yeah, me
you know,
either.
It might be a really great song, but it's so hidden behind yeah. all the production
noise
to make it, you know, in quotes, radio ready. You know, I think there's nothing better. You know, one of my favorite things in the world is Dale Ann Bradley on a stage at midnight with just her and a guitar singing a song.
I can imagine. Yeah.
Me personally, you know, artists like Tim O'Brien and artists like that can sit on a stage and just sing a song, and they're telling a story, and it's not a made up story. It's a part of their life and things that they've gone through and heartache. And, you know, I think that's what really connects with people. And I think until you get rid of all that other garbage that's cluttering the words,
amen.
You can really hear the content. I think people will start appreciating music more.
You ever see John Prine play?
Absolutely. We actually did a series of concerts with John Prine.
Oh, you got to be kidding.
In Arizona. I think it was two or three. I'm trying to think. One of the places was at the Fox Theater in Tucson, and it was in November. It was last November, and I believe that might have been one of his last shows on his tour. But we were opening some shows for him, and I actually got the opportunity to play with John on stage.
Man.
And actually, I'm looking at a frame poster on my wall right now that's John Prine in concert, and it says, "Thank you, Jeremy. Great playing with you, John Prine." And that's, you know, it goes to show that's another memory that can't be taken from me.
That's right.
John Prine
he's a phenomenal songwriter. And, I think, and those people and their following, it's like, you know, if you go to a big rock concert or a big country concert, you know, everything's loud and everything's crazy. And, you know, that's great, too, and it has its place. But, you know, when you go hear someone like John Prine, I mean, you could hear a pin drop in that theater.
Yeah, my mouth would be open the whole time.
That is such an intense feeling for me as a musician, because I know everyone in that room cares about every note that's being sung, every note that's being played, because they're listening and they are connecting. And any time as a musician you can connect with an audience like that, it is the most amazing feeling in the world.
John is one of my very favorite folk song writers and singers. I raised my kids listening to John Prine's music, and classic lines like "Rocks in my pocket and dirt in my shoes," you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Well, Jeremy, it's been a great, great time interviewing with you this evening. Jeremy Abshire, and you're in Nashville right now, right?
I am in Nashville, Tennessee. Yes, sir.
Yep. Mm. Yeah. What's the weather like right there?
Well, you know what? Believe it or not, we have snow.
I do believe it.
You should be up here in Indiana.
We got some,
you know,
too.
I moved 9 hours away. I thought I got away from this crap, and here it is again.
Hey, did you ever know anybody down there at the Gibson store there where the new Opryland is by the name of Tony Ray?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, Tony used to play with Mark Newton.
Yeah, Mark Newton Band.
When I was playing with Dale Ann, when she wasn't playing dates, I was also going out with Mark and played some shows, and that's how I met Tony.
Well, I tell you what, now, I don't know whether Tony would admit this or not, but Tony started out playing with a band called Off and Running.
That's Ike's band.
That was the band that I taught Tony everything he knows. Anyway, that's what I tell everybody.
Well, I tell you what, he is actually one of my favorite people to jam with, because he is so open to improv.
Well, yeah. I tell you what, now, as far as I can see and what I can hear, Tony is one of the best banjo players I think I've ever heard.
Yeah, he's one of the actually the best musicians I've heard.
Yeah,
he can play guitar just as well as he can play banjo.
Oh yeah,
and he's fantastic.
He and Dare are great people.
You know, his mind is so open, and he understands. What I love about him is what I love about so many musicians is that, you know, he's listened to the records and he's heard the old classics, and you know, he can play the Earl Scruggs break, but he also is open to his own style and is not afraid to venture out and be creative. And I love that about a musician.
And I tell you what, now, if he ever brings up the subject, the name Off and Running. You tell him that you talked to the guy that got him started.
Oh, I will. Don't you worry. I'll harass him soon enough.
Do it.
Tony knows both of us. And say hi to Dara. If you're near Tony, Dara's not too far behind. All right, Jeremy. Well, we thank you for your time. So much for a 15-minute interview, huh?
Hey, you know, you said it was going to be 2 hours. I'm just lucky I'm getting out of this thing early.
Yeah, it's only 35 minutes. But, hey, I want to tell you what. Have you guys booked with Dwight Dillman down at Bean Blossom this year for the summer?
Oh, absolutely. We do Bean Blossom every year.
Okay. I may get the chance to introduce you on stage again this year with Sam Jackson. So, hopefully, I'll get to see you down there.
I look forward to it, Chris and Ike. Thank you so much for the time. Great conversation. Hope to see you guys soon.
All right. Thanks, Jeremy.
It's been great, Jeremy. Thank you.
Enjoy your day.
Right, thank you.
And you guys are going on tour starting tomorrow, right?
Yeah, it starts tomorrow. Actually, it's one of those beautiful 6:30 a.m. TV calls that we all love so much.
No.
We start in Nashville and go out actually this weekend and do some promotion for the new record. And then we have Sunday off and then hit the road again on Monday, and we're pretty much gone all week, and we'll be hopping around for anywhere from Orlando to New York and just promoting the new record and doing some TV. So flip on your TVs. You might find us on there somewhere.
I got to have you get me a John Prine signature. That's the one thing I've never been able to get.
You know, I'll tell you what, he is such a kind man. You could probably email and probably have one sent to you, I'm sure.
You get me his email address, I'll do it.
He's a very great person. I got to sit and talk to him for about 5-10 minutes about really nothing, and he's just a great guy.
Well, you know, I feel like I've known John my whole life, and I love the guy. I really do. But that's through his music, you know.
Well, now, don't forget now.
I think anytime you hear his songs, you know, you can connect with the story. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about songwriting is, you know, just because it's telling a certain story, that story might mean something different to different people.
Well, now, don't forget, though, now, Jeremy, if you're out this week, if you head north up 65, you've got a date up here at this Cracker Barrel. Remember, I'll buy your dinner.
Hey, you know what? You don't even have to do that. One of the nice people at Cracker Barrel gave me one of these gold cards where I can get me a free meal anytime I want.
Well, maybe you could buy mine then. How's that?
I can do that.
All right. Take care, Jeremy. Thanks for the interview.
Hey, thank you so much. You guys have a great day, and hope to see you soon.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.